Hello and welcome to Saving Animals with Blank Park Zoo. I'm Ryan Bickle. On today's show, we have Lisa Williams. Lisa is a longtime zoo employee, and thanks to the Staff Conservation Fund, she was able to go work with some birds at the Wildlife Care Clinic, and we'll talk with her in a bit. But first, we're going to talk a little bit about Blank Park Zoo. And of course, y'all know Blank Park Zoo. You've been to the zoo, hopefully. And we have many, many animals at the zoo. And it's springtime, and the animals are coming outdoors. Some of them that can't go outside in the winter. And the zoo is starting really to look like summertime, main zoo season. And every time you come to the zoo, every time you come to Blank Park Zoo, a portion of what you spend at Blank Park Zoo is given to conservation organizations, organizations that are in the field and are actively working to save animals in wild populations and wild areas. And so not only can you have a fun family experience at Blank Park Zoo, but a portion of that does something good for the planet. So I think that's a great thing. Now, joining us in studio today, we have CSSA from the University of Iowa. They are a communications club. So hello, students. Yeah.
Hi.
All right. Thanks for joining us. They're just they came over to the zoo to learn what we do for communications, and we thought, what better thing we could do than record a podcast while they're here. So Lisa Williams, you are our membership coordinator, right?
Yes, I do membership database on donations as well.
So a lot of times when we talk to people that are recipients of the Staff Conservation Fund, they're like zookeepers, people that work with animals every day. And so it takes more than just zookeepers. Sometimes they're sort of what I would say are rock stars, right, at the zoo.
Yes.
They're always out there in the public. And when you come to the zoo and, you know, you see them feeding the animals or taking care of the animals. And it's not very often, I should say, that someone else is on our show from the zoo that doesn't do that. So when you have membership issues, talk a little bit about what you do here at the zoo.
I process all the memberships that come in through the mail, on the phone, that type of stuff. We're through the admissions area. We make sure we have their information in there and that it's correct and that we get their cards out to them so that they can use them as soon as possible.
We have many, many memberships at the zoo, and I wonder if we could just take a minute and talk about the different memberships. We have family memberships.
Yep, we have, and this goes for the zoo and our combinations, which are with Living History Farms and the Science Center of Iowa. We can do a family, which are the two adults with all their children that live with them in the household that are under 18. And then we have the grandparent, which is same thing, just with grandchildren, and they obviously don't have to live in the same household, be a little crowded sometimes. And then we have what we call our plus memberships, which allow for those family or grandparents to bring two extra guests with them every time they visit the zoo.
And so that's great. We have many, many memberships, and then individual memberships, and yeah.
Yes. We can do everything to an individual with just one person, or we can have, like, say, the families and grandparents. And
yeah, so, and then one of the great things about zoo membership is when you travel, a lot of times there's some reciprocity where you can get a discount, half price, and there's even some zoos that are free, right?
Yes, there are. There are some that are 50% off the zoo's admission versus free. We have over 160 different zoos and aquariums that reciprocate with us. And it's always, and even if you're not sure, if you have your card, just show it to the person at the zoo you're visiting, and they can check to see what your discount is.
So that's all there is to know about memberships, and you can learn more about that on Blank Park Zoo's website at blankparkzoo.com. So let's start talking about why you are here today with us. And so, Lisa, you're really interested in birds, and everyone that knows you knows that you have a fascination with birds. So tell us a little bit how that started.
It's kind of a sad story. We had the place where I worked was an electrical contractor, and he bought a new house. And when he got there, the people had moved out, but they left a few animals behind. One of them was a cockatiel, and he brought it into the office, and it stayed in the office and was an office bird for several years. Finally, it got a little bit awkward to have this cockatiel in the office, and so I ended up taking him home. And it kind of grew from there. And
so, you take care of several birds now at your house. And,
yes.
And most of them are rescues, right?
Yes. I worked with Nebraska Parrot Rescue, and there's also Iowa Parrot Rescue. And over the years, I've helped at both places with that. And so it's been kind of my passion.
Now, we get a lot of phone calls at the zoo about, I found a bird that's injured in the wild. Can I bring him to the zoo? And that's really not what we do here at the zoo. We really don't have, mostly because we don't have the space to take care of wild animals that have been injured. And so there's a place up in Ames called the Wildlife Care Clinic, right? And that's where we refer those animals to. So first talk about that organization.
Yes, the Wildlife Care Clinic was set up in 1984 by Carolyn Runyon. She was a professor there, and she wanted to give the students that were taking the different types of biology classes and pre-vet and all that an opportunity to work with wildlife and get that experience there if that was their passion versus, you know, being a dog and cat veterinarian or anything like that. And it's all done by volunteer students. They have interns and volunteers that come in that are outside the zoo as well. Outside the college as well, that come in and help out. And they are actually separate from Iowa State University, even though it is students. They do their own fundraising and that type of thing. But they literally take care of about any animal that has injured. Sometimes they will not. They don't have space for birds that are just a baby bird fell out of the nest, it's fine. That can go to a regular wildlife rehabber in your area. But these guys specialize in the injured ones.
Okay, so tell us what you did a couple of weeks ago, because we were like, where's Lisa at? Who's going to help out with the memberships? And Lisa was nowhere to be found here at the zoo, but you were up helping them out, weren't you?
Yes, I was up in Iowa State. Their facility is on the in the small animal clinic building, and it was since the weather has been so wonderful this spring, they did have a slow
start.
You're saying that
not in reality, right? The weather hasn't really been wonderful,
right? It's been freezing cold and snow and rain, and so the animals are not having babies as early as they did. So they didn't have any babies, which I was hoping to see, but they had birds, a swan, a rabbit, and a possum that were being treated. And then they have their resident birds that live there that are non-releasable education animals.
Yeah, so take us through. Do you know what makes a bird non-releasable?
Yes, the raptors, which is what they usually get, or swans, ducks, geese, along those lines. If their injuries are something that require a wing amputation or leg amputation, obviously that's not releasable if they can't fly. Also, the one that surprised me is if their vision is 60% or more impaired, they are not releasable because they are unable to see food. If they have a lot of them are hit by cars, unfortunately, and those can also get brain damage. So those are not releasable.
Okay, so there's a lot of reasons, a lot of birds. And so take us through what you were doing when you were on your staff conservation fund trip. A lot of people, they go to Africa. We've interviewed them all, and they're all gone to Africa. But you decided to go up to Ames. So tell us a little bit about that trip.
Yes, it was very fun. Got there at 8 o'clock in the morning, and the first thing you do is get food ready for everybody. And that varies. Some of the raptors, it's mice, and then it depends on whether they're fed during the morning or in the evening. There's also all the food has special vitamins put on them, because obviously we can't replicate the wild in a clinic setting. They're also receiving sometimes pain medication, antibiotics, that type of thing. So there's getting them to take their medicines in the morning. Once they're out getting checked or looked over every day to see how wounds or anything are healing. And then the cages are cleaned everything's washed. They get fresh, clean linens and everything in their cages daily. They're wiped down with disinfectants to make sure that their wounds stay clean. Wounds are wrapped if they need to be, and then they will check the wraps and make sure they're still on, because needless to say, wild animals aren't too fond of having Band-Aids on. Then everybody is weighed, and they are fed by what their weight is, because they want to make sure they're maintaining their weight and keeping good muscle tone and not getting weak from being confined into a caging in an area like that.
And tell us what, after you fed them, what other projects did you work on?
When everybody was fed and happy, the great horned owl that's a resident there gets taken outside. If there are any birds that are out, they're taken outside into a learn to fly again, or get them back used to the cold weather that we were having. There was a lot of things we could prep for. Since we knew baby season was coming, they have different cages and fish tanks and tanks and cages for these small animals to come into. So all that would be cleaned. You would, obviously, we'd get the linen ready to go to the laundry area. One fun thing is they are like the zoo. They recycle ink cartridges from all their printers. Well, needless to say, lots of ink cartridges coming in from a facility that size. There's lots of boxes. Those get cut into different size hides for the baby animals. So they're using the entire piece of that part of the recycling. And so we were cutting up boxes, making different size hides for the baby rabbits and the baby squirrels and whatever baby possums that happen to come in, that gives them a place to feel safe and secure, and it doesn't have any chemicals or anything that can injure them.
So it's more than just birds that are up there.
Yes. Yep. They do have raptors that they have some that are residents that are non-releasable. They have a great horned owl named Harvey. They have a turkey vulture named Trix. They have a screech owl named Screechy and a kestrel named Kessie. Some of them have been there since 2000, so they're on the little older side, and those get taken care of every day, and they are also their version of education animals. They take them out to grade schools, daycares, whoever wants to bring them out. In fact, they took Harvey out to an education area, and the girls that were there made Harvey a nice little thank you card.
All right. What did you learn? Was there anything that you learned or anything unusual that you thought you didn't know before you went there?
The amount of people that do care and that are willing to say, hey, I found this, can you do something for it? It's nice to know. And with baby rabbits, apparently clover is a very good food for them when they get them in. And they thought they were going to be getting in a baby rabbit, and to see these students out there that normally should be in taking care of animals out sitting in the grass picking clover out of the yard outside the building, thinking they were going to have a baby bunny come in. And so that kind of passion is very amazing. And to see that even though they're only there while they're students, it carries on afterwards.
Okay, so you feed them in the morning, and then what do you do after that?
Like I say, it's a lot of cleaning. Cleaning down areas where they're going, taking phone calls about people with questions, because sometimes people just find something and they aren't sure what it is. They have just want information. It's mopping floors and cleaning and counting, doing inventory of the food that's in the freezers and refrigerators. They do take care of they grow their own mealworms. I guess grow is not really a right word, but they do their own mealworms. And so they have the beetles that make the mealworms. They have a section for eggs. They have a section for grubs and a section for the actual mealworms that are fed.
Explain what a mealworm is, because probably many in our audience don't know.
It's actually a brown little beetle, and when it lays its eggs, it's kind of like a butterfly. It's a furryless caterpillar is what it looks like. It's just a small worm, and when they will do just like a butterfly and get into a chrysalis, and then they will turn back into a bug. Well, these when they're in the mealworm stage, they're full of nutrition, and a lot of carnivores will eat them for food.
Yeah, and so a lot of zoo animals and a lot of our education animals eat mealworms.
Yes, like the bearded dragons and hedgehogs and
so that type of thing. So we have them here at Blank Park Zoo. And then there's another type of worm that's called a superworm. And that has even more nutrition or whatever. And so some other animals eat superworms.
About super four worms. Times the size.
Yeah. That's sort of the gross part of animals are worms, right?
Yes, a lot of people do not like them, and especially with two of the residents that are there, their medication is actually put in the mealworms for them to take because they can't give them twice daily injections and that kind of stuff because they're elderly birds and they do have arthritis from their injuries as well. So their medicine gets put into a mealworm, and they get fed the mealworms.
Yeah, so sometimes when animals are in the care of humans, because they have really good veterinary care, they can live a lot longer than they would in natural habitats. And so therefore, they start getting diseases that affect elderly people, like arthritis and heart disease and cancer and those sort of things.
Yeah, and especially with all of them there being injured, injury predisposes them to that anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. were there any special projects that you did while you were there?
Not really special projects. It was fun working with and helping when they were treating the animals. We had a possum in that they don't know what happened to, and he had a terrible skin condition, and he was not using his back legs. So they would have to do bedding changes quite frequently. And to keep him from scratching, he had to wear little baby booties on his hind feet because they have some pretty decent sized claws and stuff. So it was things like even just washing those booties every day, you know, and making sure everybody had their meds. And
yeah. How many animals do they have there?
At that point, they just had the four residents, the opossum and the rabbit. The regular cottontail rabbit was found in a dumpster. They aren't sure how she got there, but she had some wounds on her back. And she was actually pregnant, so they were trying to get her better and out before she had the babies. And then we had a eastern red screech owl that was brought in. A tree trimming service had apparently injured it doing some tree trimming, and most of its wing was amputated.
How big is the facility? How many animals can they hold?
They have caging, especially for birds. There's multiples, and it depends on the size of the birds. Like they had one room where they had built little small flight areas for birds. They also had some for mammals, for like the rabbit and that kind of thing. Everything was on wheels, so it was movable. Because when I first got there, they had a trumpeter swan that actually went out the day I got there. It had been in there for some injuries, and it was now healed enough that it was going to be released on a farm in southern Iowa, I believe. And they were there picking it up about the time I got there. Well, that trumpeter swan was huge, so they had to roll all those cages out of that room to allow for that room to house just the swan. So it kind of depends on the size of the animals that they have and how many of them they have.
Trumpeter swans are very big birds and were once, what they say, extirpated. I think, is that the right way to say the word? But they were once extinct in Iowa is what that means. Mm-hmm. And Blank Park Zoo has a pair of trumpeter swans. And over the years, we've released like 30 trumpeter swans in the wild, and slowly but surely they're making a comeback, and they need wetlands, and so they live in, you know, like ponds of water and wetlands. And I once had the privilege of releasing one of the trumpeter swans from the zoo in the wild. And it's fun because they teach you how to hold the trumpeter swan, and it's this huge, huge creature. And they say the most important thing is keep control of the legs and the feet because they have sharp toenails, and they will. But you think they would, like, you know, peck at you when you're holding them, and but they don't. As long as you got a hold of their feet, they feel comfortable, and then we were able just to let them go, and they swam away, and then. When you first release them, they are unable to fly, but then after the first season, they are able to fly. And so you just watch them swim away, in the wetland, in the pond or lake, and it was quite an experience.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any animal stories like that you could tell us? It doesn't have to be about the wildlife care clinic.
They did have a swan that was released, and it was a mute swan that was released back into the pond that it had been found in. It had an injury to its crop, which is where the food is stored. It was impacted, and so they had it, he was there for several weeks getting better, and then he was re-released. And as they were getting him out of the crate, his mate was still at the pond wondering where her boyfriend had gone, and she came swimming up, and they actually have the video of them greeting each other on the pond on their website. And
oh,
it is it'll make you tear up every time you watch it.
Yeah, it sounds like a really special moment. Is there anything else? You know, talk about some of the birds that maybe you have rescued over the years, and is there a special story you can tell us about one of those?
We did go to, and these are parrots, which are not native here, obviously, but they are kept as pets. And there was a woman who had passed away. And she was in Nebraska, and I went with Nebraska Parrot Rescue. And the woman had apparently died quite a while prior to us getting there, before the family contacted anyone. And it had been a hoarding situation. And so the birds were not in the best of health, in very small cages. Some of them were kept in cages sitting in bathtubs and in rooms and that type of thing. And so we brought those back to Nebraska Parrot Rescue, and I brought two cockatiels home that had been sitting in nest boxes with about 25 eggs that had been in there so long that they were solidified. And so we found homes for all of them. They all went on to be happy and healthy, and that was a really good feeling to get that done.
So, you know, when we talk about pets, when I talk about pets at the zoo and I go out and do media appearances, a lot of times the question that is asked of me, you know, does that animal make a good pet? And so what I always say, no matter what the animal is that first you want to make sure it's an appropriate animal that is designed, not designed, but is appropriate for our environment to be a pet in Iowa. And so you don't want to have exotic animals as pets. That we don't ever recommend that. But also, animals that are recognized as ethical pets, if you will, you need to be prepared for taking care of that animal. And so you need to do research. How long is that animal going to live? How much time do you need to spend with that animal each week? Do you have that time available? How much socially can you be with that animal? And all that. Do your research before you take on something that really is not good for you or for the animal. And that's what I always like to tell people. I wonder if you could expand on that.
Yes. And with those parrots, some of them are 50, 60, 70 years that they'll be living. And surprisingly, we do get a lot of phone calls from people asking. They'll call our information line or even the membership line and say, hey, I want one phone call a couple of days ago was a woman wanting to know if it was okay to buy a monkey. She'd found a breeder somewhere and wanted to know if it was okay.
Yeah.
So you never know what kind of phone calls you're going to get. We try to politely explain that that's not an appropriate pet. It is not legal to have them here in Iowa as pets, a lot of them, depending on the species and that type of stuff.
Yeah.
But it can. You don't realize that they live a long time. And they not, even though they may be a cute little baby, when they mature, they can be not so cute and adorable.
Yeah. Well, if you have an animal that lives 50, 60, 70 years, they're going to outlive you most likely. And so who's going to take care of that animal when you are no longer around? And so that's another thing to think about.
Yes, in your will.
and may I point out that there are animal organizations in the Des Moines area, like the ARL, that have plenty of animals that are appropriate for people to have that are available for adoption. So
yes, those
are places that you probably should check out when you're looking for a pet.
Definitely.
Lisa, we only have, surprisingly, we only have a couple minutes left. And so I wonder if you could just, you know, tell us one, the main thing you took away from this experience. You know, you were able to be away from the zoo for a couple weeks and still have this awesome experience helping animals and saving animals. Tell us just what did you take away from this?
Well, I am really thankful that I was able to get this and go up and spend those 10 days working with the people up there. It's basically, it reinforced the fact that I love working with animals. Even though I don't do it here at the zoo, I get to do it at home and with places like this. And it's satisfying to be able to know that we're able to help them. So many times things are found too late or you can't help them, but going above and beyond and making sure that they are well taken care of. The veterinary professors at this college come in and do rounds just like they would in a regular hospital, and they check on them and make sure their medications are right. And it was just so awesome to see all those people coming together from different places, different coming into the college for different degrees. And it's just like, it's so nice to see that and know that they're out there and they're taking care of our wildlife and they're willing to go above and beyond to do that.
Well, thanks so much, Lisa. And if people want to learn more about the Wildlife Care Clinic, do you have a website or a phone number that they could call?
They do have, they are on Facebook, and it's the Wildlife Care Clinic. You can do them there. They are on Instagram. They do have a website, and I thought I had that website here in my notes, but I do not. Okay. But if you look at Iowa State University's website and search for Wildlife Care Clinic, it will come up, and it has pictures and information, how to volunteer there if you're interested in volunteering. They do take volunteers there. They do ask you to go through a little bit of training ahead of time if you've not dealt with any of the animals.
Well, that sounds great. Now, if people want to get a hold of you to purchase a membership or renew their membership, they got membership questions, how do they do that?
You can call us on the phone, which is area code 515-974-2600. You can also send us an email, which is membership@blankparkzoo.org. And we'll answer your questions. Or if you're anywhere near, you can stop by the zoo and we can help you there.
Sounds good. Thanks so much for joining us today. And if you want to learn more about Blank Park Zoo, head over to our website, blankparkzoo.com. And if you want to see some cool animal videos, check out our YouTube channel. And then make sure you follow us on Facebook and Twitter and all those social media places. And we'll see you next time on Saving Animals with Blank Park Zoo.